Fox News Radio studios in New York City, giving you opinions and facts with a positive approach. It's Brian Kilmeade. In for Brian, it's Mary Walter.
Yay, it's me. Happy Friday, everybody. How's everybody doing today? Having a good day so far? I mean, it's hard to have a bad day. It's somewhat early. I am Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. We are going to start it right off the bat with A.B. Stoddard. This woman does everything. She's an associate editor and columnist for Real Clear Politics. She's a contributor to Sirius XM POTUS Channel 124 and exhausted, apparently, because she's here with us, too. A.B., thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here, because there are so many things that I want to get to with you. Can we talk about the Democrats? Because apparently every Democrat who has any kind of name recognition, and some who don't, are running to challenge President Trump. So let's start with Beto O'Rourke. It's interesting. Wealthy Obama bundlers are starting to line up behind Beto O'Rourke, and they are calling him the White Obama, which I thought was very interesting. Why the love affair? Why the attraction to Beto O'Rourke?
I think it's called 38 electoral votes in the Lone Star State. And that is, for all Beto's weirdness and sort of discombobulated, unformed neophyte presentation, he came within 2.6 percentage points of beating Ted Cruz in Texas. That was the lowest voter turnout in the country, the state of Texas, before November 6th. And so party insiders and these donors who've been waiting for him to run believe that he not only has a cult following, and I don't like cults, but President Trump has one as well. Cult followings in a Senate race, 800,000 donors in 50 states, people throwing fundraisers all around the country, LeBron James with his Beto hat, et cetera, begins with a foundation where the party could possibly turn Texas blue if Beto was on the ticket as number one or number two. That explodes President Trump's reelection map, and I think that is a pragmatic goal on their part.
That makes sense. But here's the thing. I want you. This is Beto O'Rourke when asked about third trimester abortions.
So are you for or against third trimester abortions?
So the question is about abortion and reproductive rights. And my answer to you is that should be a decision that the woman makes.
I trust her. In Texas, having that stand on abortion when the majority of people across the country, Democrat, Republican, in between, disagree with third trimester abortions. How does he swing Texas with an attitude like that, with a stance like that?
Well, that's a good question in the general election, right? We see a lot of these Democratic contenders going way far out on the left in the primary to try to wake up and energize young voters who are apathetic, who distrust our political system and don't want to engage. And they believe that if they can mobilize them instead of persuading the middle, that they will be able to beat President Trump. I disagree. I think that scaring the middle and having them stay home in the general election, people who cannot stomach President Trump but can't vote for the Democrat, that reelects Trump. It's what elected him in 2016. He ran an inside straight. And if people could stomach Hillary, he wouldn't be president. And so this is what they're doing, the Democratic candidates in the primary race so far, is not answering to charges that the party's anti-Semitic, pro-infanticide, anti-billionaire, anti-prosecutor, anti-airplane, wants to change our whole system, whether it's court packing, lowering the voting age. All this stuff is radical. It will scare people, but I don't hear the voices on the campaign trail countering the voices of these kind of young insurgents who want a lot of publicity in the, you know, freshman caucus of the House Democrats. So this is going to be problematic for them. They have 14 months to come around, you know, once I guess they are, once, you know, three or four of them are really in the final run. But I do think it's dangerous.
You mentioned the Supreme Court packing. A lot of these candidates are running on four positions that will require constitutional amendments. The Supreme Court packing is one of them. Beto O'Rourke here in Burlington, Iowa, on expanding the Supreme Court. And also he brought up term limits on the Supreme Court as well.
What if there were five justices selected by Democrats, five justices selected by Republicans, and those 10 then picked five more justices independent of those who chose the first 10? There's another idea of having term limits on those justices.
And they tell two friends, and we're suddenly going to have 150 people on the Supreme Court. I don't understand his, you know, how this would work. Again, that would that require a constitutional amendment?
It sounds like it would, and I'm not an expert. I'm not a constitutional scholar, but the problem is these reforms, and South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg is also advocating for a system like this. You know, they do make sense in a lot of ways, and we're learning this morning from Joan Biskupic's book on John Roberts that the court, you know, is as political as we all fear, and lifetime appointments are getting, are being questioned as we see how politically charged the Supreme Court has become. But again, if you combine it, Mary, with all these other proposals, I think it seems like too much at once, and it seems radical. I really do. I mean, if you're asking about abolishing the Electoral College while you want to change the Supreme Court, while you want to lower the voting age and on, I think people are going to tune it out. This might be a reform that makes sense in a few years. We are looking at a norm-busting president who's undermined the judiciary, who ignores the Constitution, who ignores the Congress. I think for Democrats to beat him, looking like they're going to throw the whole system out the window, doesn't look like a smart path.
Joe Biden has not announced yet, although it's probably the worst kept secret in politics that Joe Biden's probably going to run for president.
Right.
And back in 1983, he talked about packing the Supreme Court, and he talked about how FDR came up with this. Here's his opinion on this.
President Roosevelt clearly had the right to send to the United States Senate, the United States Congress, a proposal to pack the court. It was totally within his right to do that. He violated no law. He was legalistically absolutely correct, but it was a bonehead idea. It was a terrible, terrible mistake to make, and it put in question, for an entire decade, the independence of the most significant body, including the Congress, in my view, the most significant body in this country, the Supreme Court of the United States of America.
So it doesn't sound like Joe Biden, should he throw his hat into the ring, is going to be moving as far left as the other candidates so far. Does that take him out of the running? Does he have to be left? Does he have to move that way?
I think that we don't know the answer to that question yet. I think he comes in with a lot of concern about what the left is going to do to him. Because they know he's going to be more of a centrist Democrat. But I think that by the time they get done with him on comments he's made in the past, like the ones you just played on desegregation, on Anita Hill, he is certainly going to face a lot of heat. And it's going to be a question of how much the Democratic primary electorate, which I don't really think we understand yet, because they're going in so many directions. But all the polls say they prioritize electability over all this ideological purity. If they do prioritize electability, they will give Joe Biden a favorable reception, and he will remain popular in that race and could likely be the nominee. I think it's going to be a long way. Like I said, right now, I don't see them pushing back on some of the things that are making the Democratic Party a punchline at Trump rallies. Maybe they will in 6 months. I expect him to be put through the ringer. I think that there is a real far left energy in the party that is really, you know, is going to endanger their path to the White House. We'll see how, how the polls look and the reception he receives is. I like you, I continue to see polls saying that they favor electability, and beating Trump is their number one goal. Joe Biden is the number one threat to President Trump. President Trump knows that. All the Republicans know that. He's the only one who wins back Republicans who won't vote for Trump. He's the only one who can, you know, really safely compete the best in the Midwest. And lock down a path to winning. So I think they take a great risk if they don't nominate Joe Biden, but I think they're going to slap him around for sure.
Oh, I'm sure he's looking forward to that. I mean, we've got more on Joe Biden and who he may choose as a running mate. That's coming up. Mary Walter with A.B. Stoddard.
It's Brian Kilmeade. information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade today, joined by A.B. Stoddard. We're talking about the 2020 candidates on the Democrat side. Joe Biden has not tossed his hat into the ring yet, but Axios is reporting that Biden's top advisors have discussed adding Stacey Abrams to the with him as his running mate, Joe Biden's running mate, in an attempt to show Americans that the former vice president, quote, isn't just another old white guy. AB, this is incredibly transparent, I think, anyway, without knowing this. But I think we all look at if he does choose Stacey Abrams. We know that they met, I think it was 2 weeks ago in Washington, D.C. If he does choose her, we know why he's choosing her, because the Democrats are so wrapped up in identity politics. He has to choose a woman of color as his running mate. I don't think he has any other choice. Does this backfire on him?
I think it's a mistake. I think it is either an ingenious trial balloon in order to bring about a conversation about his self-awareness, where he realizes his liabilities going into the primary field, that he might have to toy with the idea of just doing one term. He understands that he's old. He understands the energy is among women and voters of color and younger voters, and that he will have to have a diverse ticket. And maybe by floating this trial balloon that seems so dumb, he gets that conversation out there. But to tie himself down right now, or to tie Stacey Abrams down, only you know that Democrats, national Democrats, are desperate for her to challenge Senator Perdue in Georgia, because they have a path to take the Senate back, and the Republican majority is in peril, and Senate Republicans know that. And so that would be a big boon to get her out of the Senate race for Republicans. So there's a lot of tension around this question of Stacey Abrams, but to lock down a ticket this early, when, as I said, I think that the Democratic primary electorate, though I can't get in their heads at all, hasn't really decided what it wants, and I think we don't know yet what it wants. But to be locked down with each other like this, what if something comes of Mueller or later the SDNY, and though Vice President Biden would clearly be in the camp of Speaker Pelosi, that we're not going to impeach this guy, we're going to beat him, and it's a waste for the House to do it if the Senate won't go along and convict him in a trial. What if Stacey Abrams, was on the ticket with him already, and he's not even the nominee, right? He's just a candidate, and she's saying something like, we've got to impeach. I mean, they have no idea where they would diverge along the way and what's going to happen. It's really better for him to get the conversation out there, and maybe this was an effort to do it. It seems both presumptuous and desperate at the same time. So, like I said, maybe it is an evil genius trial balloon, but I think it would not be good for him to do that.
Well, if it doesn't work out, she has a night job. I don't know if you knew she has a night gig. When she is not Stacey Abrams, legislator, she is Selena Montgomery, writer of romance novels. Did you know this?
Excuse me? This is a news bomb.
Yes.
I had no idea about this.
She has a nom de plume. She has written 8 romantic thrillers with titles such as Hidden Sins, The Art of Desire, Secrets and Lies.
I think that's absolutely wonderful. I had no idea. But I mean, are we supposed to be surprised by anything anymore? Amazing.
I think it's great. I find it funny and good for her. There's nothing wrong with that. I think it's funny. But I thought, listen, she's got a side hustle in case this whole politics thing doesn't work out. So good for her.
Yeah. I mean, look, the Democratic Party has her on a pedestal, and they believe that she has, real viability, and that certainly she could run later or on her own right now. And so they think it's sort of insulting to say he should pick her, even though she's not a candidate, and let her sort of sit there and run around and campaign with him. But again, they're really desperate to have her make a Senate run and think about running for president later.
But before we run out of time here, the president has been battling George Conway. And here's President Trump. It's cut 25, Eric. President Trump talking about George Conway, who's married to Kellyanne Conway, who works for the president, has been part of the president's campaign. She ran the president's campaign. She still has a job with the administration, and this is going on.
Yeah, I don't know him. He's a whack job. There's no question about it. But I really don't know him. I think he's doing a tremendous disservice to a wonderful wife. Kellyanne is a wonderful woman. And I call him Mr. Kellyanne. The fact is that he's doing a tremendous disservice to a wife and family. She's a wonderful woman.
Kellyanne Conway now has to pick between the two. She goes on television and into the talkers, and she's defending the president, saying that he was defending me and that the president left this alone for months and he finally decided to hit back. How long does this go on for? I don't know about you, but I cannot be in a relationship with someone who's trashing my boss publicly.
Right. I mean, look, Kellyanne is, as you know, is as smooth as they come, and she is nonplussed by this. And I believe that there's some form of, you know, good cop, bad cop arrangement going on. Otherwise, it's too awkward for us to understand. There's no question George Conway, you know, takes the bait just like President Trump does and tweets back and, you know, is super confrontational and extends it. I think it's more damaging for the president, obviously, than for George Conway to be in this spat. But as to George and Kellyanne, they've figured something out because they're still married. I think that they're okay with this. But she, it is interesting that she took the president's side, but everyone around the president takes the president's side. There's no question. And I wouldn't have expected her to be so, you know, explicit about it, but I knew she wasn't going to say, you know, we've all watched Kellyanne for years. I've known her for many, many years. And she just wasn't going to say, I'm really upset that my boss hurt my husband's feelings.
Yeah, and we have 1 minute left here. When you said good cop, bad cop, here's the theory that I've heard is that he's attacking the president. She's staying with him just in case in 2020 the president doesn't remain the president. They can still have a gig in Washington.
Well, there's no question she can say later, look, you know, I saw the good in my job, you know, in many ways, you know, my husband was right. If it turns out that the president faces, you know, consequential legal exposure, I mean, you know, I mean, we have to believe they're still married and they have a cohesive family life. And if they do, it's because they've worked this awkwardness out in ways that has not been revealed to us. That means they're in more agreement than we know.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate you having us, and have a fantastic weekend.
You too. Thanks so much for having me.
Take care. 866-408-7669. What do you think about this feud with Kellyanne and her husband? Should Kellyanne be having to defend her husband's attacks on her boss in public? And have you ever been in a similar situation where your spouse or partner couldn't stand your boss? 866-408-7669. I'm Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade, and you're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
To your ears. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Well, my husband also has been very critical of the president publicly, which is unlike him, just because he's traditionally been a very private person. In 2016, which was known as the year of the tweet, George Conway sent exactly zero tweets. So this is new. And what also is new is not supporting the agenda of the president and my work there. I was raised, though, in a household of strong Italian Catholic women who taught me that you air grievances like that in private, so it is very surprising to see it be so public.
That was Kellyanne Conway on Mornings with Maria discussing her husband and the president having this very public feud via Twitter, the president's favorite means of communication. And I ask you, because this is amazing to me, 866-408-7669. By the way, I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. I'm not Brian Kilmeade, in case you didn't notice. But should Kellyanne be put in this position where she has to be responsible for her husband's tweets? Everyone's looking at her saying, well, what do you have to say about your husband's tweets? That's the first thing. The second thing, I have to tell you, I've been married to my husband for so long that at this point, should things go horribly awry, neither one of us wants to do the paperwork to get divorced because we're tired. So I just don't have the time, and I'm just too tired for paperwork. But if my husband were publicly saying something about my boss, I would shut that down real quick. There is no way that would be happening in my marriage. I personally, if my husband did that to me, I would find that phenomenally disrespectful to me. I'm a big fan of not airing dirty laundry in public. I don't think it should be even aired among the family because I think that just causes problems. You settle your dirty laundry in your house. It doesn't go outside your home. So, and this is for everyone to see. So, and Kellyanne then takes her boss's side. She takes Trump's side. She doesn't take her husband's side. She says, well, you know, hey, the president was defending me. He's a counterpuncher. And he left it alone for months out of respect for me. But do you think he shouldn't respond when somebody, a non-medical professional, accuses him of having a mental disorder? You think he should just take that sitting down? She defends the president. 866-408-7669. Also want to know from you, do you and your partner have the same similar political views or outlooks? For me, I don't know. I guess my husband and I just fell in it. And politics wasn't this divisive, you know, 10 years ago. And so, you know, we're the same religion. We're on the same page politically. There are a couple of things that he does that makes me question my choices. But they never have anything to do with, you know, politics or anything like that. Could you be in a relationship with someone who just has polar opposite of views from you on things like politics? 866-408-7669. We kick it off in Georgia with Rob, listening on WVGA. Rob, good morning. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Mary. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Kellyanne Conway has a boss, and you keep mentioning the boss, but he's not just a boss. He's the president of the United States. So when she defends her boss, she's defending the number one guy in our country. She works with him every day. She sees that he's truly genuine in all his decisions. She sees a boss that from the day he was inaugurated, he's been beaten, he's been attacked, he's been just destroyed by the media. And I think she's doing what she thinks is right by protecting our president, President Trump, from all attacks, including one within her own household. I can only imagine that they have an ideological disagreement, and they've agreed to disagree on what they believe. But I don't think she's worried about President Trump because he's pretty tough. And you know what? God bless him because he's done more under attack since the day he's been in than any other president in my lifetime, and I'm going on 50. And he continues to get up every day and withstand the attack and move forward. And the things he's done that people don't even know about is just unlimited. The deregulation, I mean, Kellyanne's doing what's right, and God bless her as well because we need her to keep doing it.
Yeah, but you said that they have agreed to disagree, but they haven't agreed to disagree. Her husband is fighting this battle, waging a war. And listen, if he wins and he discredits Trump, his wife doesn't have a job. And I don't know if she can get another job in Washington, D.C., having been part of this administration, because everyone else in Washington, D.C. is against everyone who is for this administration. They are in a camp unto themselves. They are pariahs. So she doesn't have a job. So maybe do you think that's what's going on here, that it's good cop, bad cop? He attacks the administration so if Trump doesn't get reelected, he has a job and can make money. And the opposite, that if Trump does get reelected, she has a job and can make money.
In my opinion, watching Kellyanne Conway on the local TV shows every Sunday or whenever she comes on, she is absolutely flawless. Her arguments are passionate and from the heart. She doesn't do it because she's trying to defend somebody or make something up. I think she's doing it because she genuinely believes he's right. And it's okay, though, because they've got another 4 years for her to work. So I think they'll be okay. And after we get past all this Mueller garbage, I think the president's going to have a clear path to do quite a bit more. And I think she'll have plenty of job opportunities afterwards.
All right. You heard Rob's prediction. I hope you're right, Rob. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a fantastic weekend. The idea of good cop, bad cop, I've heard that being floated in D.C. circles because of the fact that, again, if you're in D.C. and you are associated with this administration, you've seen it. You saw Sarah Huckabee Sanders get shouted out of a restaurant where they refused to serve her. The restaurant has since shut down because people boycotted it. Because, listen, this goes both ways, right? This goes both ways. You've seen, I think it was Ted Cruz and his wife shouted out of a restaurant. You saw Pam Bondi shouted out when she went to the movies. So anyone associated with this president, and Pam's in Florida, but especially in Washington, D.C., you're a target. You have a target on your back. And so I would think that it would be really hard for Kellyanne to get another job should President Trump not win re-election. And because I'll tell you right now, 2020 is a really long way away. And we don't know who's going to run on the Democrat side. I have faith in the president being able to pull this off again. But you don't know what is waiting around the corner. And so maybe this is their way of saying, well, we're going to need an income, so I'm not going to be able to work here because I'm persona non grata because I worked for President Trump. And that's a mortal sin in Washington, D.C. I mean, they will tar and feather you and run you out of town. Whereas her husband publicly attacking the president makes his stance known. He's a hero to the left. You get a Democrat president in, boom, George Conway's got a job. 866-408-7669. Let's go to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Joel, listening on WTKG. Joel, good morning.
Good morning. Great show. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
It is a weird situation between Kellyanne and her husband. I agree. But you had asked the question, could you be with somebody, another person, and you had polar opposite views politically and everything.
Right.
And to me, it's easy. If the woman I'm with is a sweet person and a good, genuine, nice person, I take it as a challenge. And I welcome the opportunity to convince her to my way because I'm right as a conservative. To me, it's an easy argument. I can just go all day. And I don't shy away from the challenge to opine and give my point of view.
What's interesting, though, is it's getting harder and harder to be in that situation, though, because we found a study that was done, I want to say a couple of, probably 4 or 5 months ago, was done, and they asked millennials who are, you know, currently dating and swiping left or swiping right, if you saw someone's political opinions or their political leanings were conservative or Republican, they would swipe left. They will not even date that person. Because of the fact that
I was on a dating site once, and I put, if you voted for Obama, don't even respond. And boy, the hate I got from that. But I'm 61 now, and I've learned how to debate. I've learned not to get ugly about it. There's a right way and a wrong way, and you got to ask more questions than anything else, and bring it out of them. And because people, you start getting in political debates, and you just put them in a corner, you're never going to change them.
That's very true.
They kind of got to come to it on their own, and you just got to lay the arguments out there and let them do it. And it's taken a lot of years for me to figure that out. In the early days when I was young, I got a lot of heated arguments, and I don't do that anymore.
Well, good for you. There is a learning curve, and you got to help them have their come to Jesus moment. Thank you so much. We're going to have more come to Jesus moments. 866-408-7669. Kellyanne and George, how is this working? I'm Mary Walter on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Challenging conventional thought and wisdom. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And I'm Mary Walter, sitting in the seat for Brian Kilmeade. He has the day off today. 866-408-7669 is the number. And we're talking about Kellyanne Conway and her husband, George, and this public battle that her husband is having with the president, calling the president mentally unfit. And the president calling him a whack job. And Kellyanne's stuck in the middle. And should Kellyanne be held accountable? Should she have to respond for her husband's tweets? Could you even be in this situation? I cannot be in a relationship with someone who's that just diametrically opposed to me when it comes to politics. And what about the stress? Right? What about the work is stressful enough? Kellyanne's job has to be phenomenally stressful. So you get all this stress at work from your husband, and then you got to go home and deal with him. That's even more stress. I don't know how she would deal with that. 866-408-7669. Pam in Springfield, Missouri, listening on KICK. I would assume that's Kick. Hi, Pam. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hey, this is not really all about George Conway. This is what I think's going on. He's a man, and he's going to work every day, and all of his work buddies are pressuring him to get Kellyanne to quit because they don't like Trump. They don't like anything about him, and they're putting pressure on George. He's probably got all of his buddies at the gym, or he doesn't go to the gym, but where
he does.
He goes to the gym
as much as Hillary practices yoga, okay?
Yeah. So anyway, but he's getting all this pressure from his buddies and his work that they don't like her, and she needs to quit. He's probably had that private conversation with Kellyanne saying, hey, listen, I'm getting all this flack. It's affecting my work. It's affecting my business. It may affect my future. And she's like, George, grow up. Go back to work. And she won't quit. So
you know what, Pam, hold on a second, because you may be onto something, so I want you to hear this. This is Kellyanne Conway with Mornings with Maria. Listen to what she had to say. You're very smart.
This was the first time the president actually hit back, right? I mean, the president hasn't said anything.
He's protective of me, and that's what people really should take from this, is that I'm not being asked to choose between my marriage and my job. Donald Trump has never made, the president has never made me feel that way, Maria. I know George is quoted recently as saying, I wish he didn't work there.
So does he want you to step down? George, does George
say? Yeah. Certainly. But what message would that send to the feminists everywhere who pretend they're independent thinkers and men don't make decisions for them? They can talk it and I can walk it.
How about that, Pam?
Well, yeah, that's exactly
she turned it right around.
Well, he wants her to quit, and she won't, so now he's gotten to take it to Twitter and make her publicly humiliated, trying to, just to get her to quit or the president to fire her, which he won't. But he's literally trying to force this wife to quit by publicly shaming her. I mean, it's just, and I cringe. I cringe as a woman. I cringe as a wife that the guy is, it's really about George. It's really about his ego.
Pam, 30 seconds here. Do you think that George is jealous of her, of Kellyanne's relationship with Trump?
Well, probably. Probably she's very successful, but I think more it's really about his ego and the fact that he can't handle the pressure and his work from the people that he works with bashing him every day. And they're probably telling him it's hurting his work and his future and his career. It's really about his male ego.
Thank you so much. It's so funny, the idea of George being bashed, like at the lunch table. Remember when you were in middle school, when you're in junior high, and you had to go to the lunchroom, and you didn't want to go to the lunchroom because there was that one person who would just give you such a rash, and so you didn't want to go to the lunchroom? Can you see George doesn't look like he's missed a lunch, but can you see George in the lunchroom going, come on, guys, knock it off. I can control my wife. I swear I can. Leave me alone. Jeff in Raleigh, North Carolina, on WPTF. Jeff, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I tell you right now, it's one of those things where she's between a rock and a hard place, right? Because on the one hand, you've got those of us that support this president that cringe when he kind of gives ammunition to the Democrats when he's kind of clouding his own message. And now he's in a situation where he has people leaving his administration at different points, and Kellyanne Conway is one of those that's been a stalwart. And now he is basically just adding fuel to the fire that's just, I don't see how this woman keeps it together.
Absolutely. And she's between a rock and a hard place. But when I heard all this, when the president responded, I was kind of hoping he would stop. I'm like, please, please don't take the bait, Mr. President. Please don't respond. And he did.
Yes, and that's what I don't understand, and that's one of the frustrating things for those of us, again, that support this president, is that it just seems at times the optics seem that he's not listening to his advisors. When he gets something in his mind, just like the McCain comments that were cringeworthy, it's like, just listen to those people that are around you that are acting in your best interests, and, you know, he's got to basically listen more.
Yeah, I trust the president, though. Jeff, thank you so much. I do trust this president's judgment because I do think he's so much smarter than I am, which is what I want in a president. I want a president, and I could be different here, but I don't want a president who's just like me. I don't want a president who's relatable. I want a president who's on operating on such a different plane. We're not relatable at all. You know, we don't live the same life. That's who I want leading the country. Let's go to James in North Carolina. He's kind of in this situation. James, good morning.
Good morning. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So, first of all, you know, my wife and I, we have two different political views. You know, I was Democratic, and, you know, over a period of time, I have evolved to a conservative, you know, concept. I would say I'm more of a conservative Democrat, but I am certainly constantly evolved as I have changed. My political views have changed. And, you know, my wife is very Democrat. And you know, for us, the conversation is it's good. It keeps us both critically thinking. I mean, and I think it makes for good, you know, it's I enjoy it, actually. But I really don't like the anger and the frustration that comes with the fighting and the fueling between different views and different opinions. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just, you know, for me, you know, you're Democratic, okay. If you're Republican, okay. And hear my view. This is why I am, and this is why I have evolved. I mean, and it's all good. But getting back
I like
to what's
that.
Going on. Yeah, yeah.
I like the way you handle it, James. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I like the way you handle it, that you guys can have an intelligent discussion about it, and it's not what the Conways are doing, which is having this public fight about their disagreements. That just can't be healthy. And I know someone who he's a guy who's definitely conservative, and his wife is definitely liberal, went to a liberal all-girls school, you know, college, and he just doesn't really have discussions with her, don't really fight about it, and then he just gets in the voting booth and just votes Republican. That's just the way they handle it. James, thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing that. I know people in what I like to call mixed marriages, but they do not fight the way the Conways do. I don't think most of us do. I'm Mary Walter. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.